Hello there, friends and fellow warriors. Welcome to another episode of Warriors and Hope. So today, Sean and I are going to do what we're going to call our very own Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. And we have personal experience, obviously a lot of you know about it, to talk about on this subject. But I really want people to listen to this and you know, I know everyone has different experiences with law enforcement, but I really appreciate you listening to this episode today, and kind of hopefully you'll resonate with a lot of the things that we have to say, and maybe some of our perspectives and our experiences will give you a new appreciation for what law enforcement goes through. So welcome, Sean.
Thank you.
So first of all, we were talking about this earlier, you know, that we've always appreciated law enforcement because I think both you and I like order.
Mm-hmm.
And we're law-abiding citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So you said something earlier that most people never have an interaction with the police.
Most law-abiding citizens don't have negative interactions with
right.
the police.
Probably the worst one is you get pulled over. And when you get pulled over, you know you're busted. You know you were speeding. And a lot of people lash out, right? You know, they shoot the messenger, as they say. I'm exactly the opposite. So I got a ticket less than a year ago, first one in over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, oh my gosh, you guys. So we have an elementary school in our neighborhood that was just built down the road. And I had gone out and everything was fine. And when I came up the main road, at this time, school was in and they had put up these 15 mile an hour things. And I just didn't notice them. It was in, you know, early before school. I didn't notice them. And so I slowed down as I went around the corner. I guess I was going 23. When he pulled me over, he said that I saw it just as he came out. And I was going 23, which the speed limit's 35. So he was like, you know, if you'd gone 20, I wouldn't have given you a ticket. But, you know, this is a new school area. They're being really super careful. And, of course, I was just basically laying on my sword going, I did it. And he was going, let me show you how it won't go on your ticket. You can go to this driving school. And I was going, no, I'll just pay it. I did it. Like I was feeling. And then I thanked him for his service because I'm not that person that if I get caught, I did it. How can I be mad at the officer? But don't you think that's kind of a normal thing when people get caught?
Yeah, I think that, like, I was just thinking about that as you were saying that. And for context, for anybody who's not aware of this, I've been working with law enforcement, not as a law enforcement officer, but working with them in the capacity of the equipment that they utilize for body cameras, stuff like that, for about 5 years. So I've interacted with thousands of cops at this point. So it's hard for people, I think, when they get pulled over, oh, it's just a speeding thing. What is a law? It's actually written in your state's code that it is a law. It is a very, very low-class misdemeanor, but you have broken a law.
Right.
And when people say, well, it's just speeding, right, but it's illegal to go in excess of speed. So when you get pulled over, you take this attitude with these people, which is what they receive all day, every day,
I know,
from every single person. I mean, who would even
except for me?
Yeah. Who would even want that job?
I know.
Yeah, like me, I go above and beyond. If I get pulled over, I take my keys out of the ignition, put them on the dashboard so they can see I'm no threat to run. I keep my hands on 10 and 2 so they can see it. If I have, we live in Arizona, if I have my firearm with me, I'll tell them I have a loaded gun in the car, which I'm legally allowed to possess. And I'll say, if you want me to take it out, you can see it. And they always laugh like, no, you're fine. Just don't touch it while I'm over here.
Yeah,
and
right.
But I go out of my way and have never had a bad interaction.
So do you think that since you've met with so many law enforcement officers at all levels, right? All the way up through chiefs, you've been really friends with chiefs that have taken you out for dinner. You're supposed to be whining and dining them when you're out, you know, selling your products to them, and they've taken you out. Do you get the feeling, though, that, and again, you guys, there, of course there are bad cops because there are bad dentists and there are bad people at the grocery store, whatever. And there's bad everybody. But for the most part, I think that people do go into law enforcement for the right reasons. Have you felt like a lot of them really do feel like it's a calling?
Oh, yeah. I'd say the majority of, and just for context, I worked with agencies under like 120 sworn. So your standard normal town that you live in Oklahoma, Texas, California, Arkansas, Louisiana. So I had the good old boys. Then I had the political, you know, far left side kind of.
Yeah.
And every single one of them, I would meet a cop who was like, yeah, I was born in this town and I wanted to be a cop here to make my town that I grew up in better. and I've been here for 30 years. And I actually just retired and then took a part-time lieutenant job with the sheriff's office to do support because I still wanted to. Yeah, they're in it for a career. And when they've made the money to sit on their butt and play golf for the rest of their life, they go back and keep doing it.
Yeah.
And actually, sorry to elaborate even more, but for anyone who doesn't know who Commissioner Ramsey is, he was the chief of police for Philadelphia, and they have the police commission. He's the head of the police commission. So he's literally the top cop in the United States of America. I don't know if he still is. He came and spoke at one of our company events, and he stated that he had to use his gun 3 times in the line of duty. He had to shoot 3 different people. 1 lived and 2 died. And he said, at the end of my career, as I'm retiring, my only regret is that I won't get to do it all over again because I loved it so much. Not those people I had to shoot protecting right. the citizens of my city, but the fact that it has to be over for me and I have to stop doing this. That's my only...
That's a calling.
And he was like, that's what you need to understand. These are the people you're dealing with.
That's so cool because most people, when they retire, they can't wait to be done with whatever it is they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that so much. And I think that I've always been a real supporter of law enforcement, and I like order. Here's what I like. You know what I really like, Sean? If I'm in trouble, I get to call 911 and someone's going to come and help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who don't want to fund the police, I don't understand. I do understand these things that have happened that shouldn't happen. I think we can all get on board with, you know, certain people having, you know, got killed by the police. Lots of times, though, I hate to say this, my friends, lots of times they were committing crimes while it happened. Did they deserve to die? No. Just like Jamie didn't deserve to die.
But your actions do, in my opinion, play a factor in how you got into that situation. That you can't say that I have no culpability. It doesn't matter that I did fentanyl after getting out of prison for hitting my kids and was, you know what I mean? That this has happened with multiple people where they go, well, this guy was a 3-time felon, violent felonies. And then people will say, well, none of that matters. A cop had no right. And you're...
Yeah, it's hard to know in that moment, though.
I'm sorry, when they've met you multiple times, they know you just got out of a 10-year bid for child abuse. And those are factors that they... I mean, also think about... Those are who they're dealing with. A guy who's willing to hurt people, who's high on drugs...
And when they're high on drugs, they're powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when we lived in, we lived in Bellevue, but we lived right next to this other town, Newcastle, which is, I don't know, is it even a town? Is there even a town?
No, it's a cross street with a grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. Very nice area.
I know right where you're going with this.
Very safe area. And we had this guy who was naked. And
high on PCP.
High on PCP. And this was, you guys... years ago, before the drugs were even as powerful as they are now.
2004.
Oh, you know the whole story. Well, you can tell the story. And this cop was ready to retire.
Yeah, the cop was like a month from retirement at 30 years. Approached him and basically expressed to him, you can't be naked in the middle of the street. Guy's wearing nothing but socks. And the guy lunged at him and took him to the ground, pulled his gun out and emptied the clip into his face and killed him in the middle of the street. Then ran back up to his apartment and stood on it. It was on like a 3rd-story balcony, stood on it and beat his chest and howled like he was King Kong.
Right. So that's what people are dealing with.
And then when he was tried in court, a bunch of his friends and all that came to court and were screaming in the back, cheering for him. You're getting railroaded, blah, 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 acting as though he hadn't. I mean, these are people that cops are interacting with, being harmed by.
It's unbelievable. That, you know, that reminds me when you say, too, I've also heard a lot of people go, well, they could have shot him in the leg. Well, so I remember we have these friends, Terry and Diana, and they were Long Beach police officers, both a married couple, and they did vice. They did undercover stuff. I mean, they did a lot.
30-year and 25-year police lieutenant.
Yes.
In gang.
And detectives.
Gang and lieutenants.
And, yeah, they had a lot of different
Yeah, detective lieutenants in the gang units in.
In bad areas that they were in. And I remember one time one of them saying to me, I wish that every American adult could go into a simulator and understand how difficult it is to make a split second decision about whether that is a baby or a bomb, or whether it is a cell phone or a gun, you know, whatever it is that they have to. So when people are going, well, they should have, it's kind of like how we said on a recent podcast, Sean, and we've talked about before, people don't understand what it's like to go through what we went through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what it feels like to lose my sister. People don't understand. We don't understand either what it's like to have your life on the line. And here's the bottom line. if I'm going to choose between going home to my family and protecting my community and trying to shoot someone in the leg who's running, that's the thing that Diana said to me. Do you know how hard it is to shoot someone who's running in the leg?
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, it's interesting you bring that up. And sorry, I was looking something up on my phone because I wanted to get the lyrics accurate. I will make sure I leave it out. But most of you are probably familiar with Snoop Dogg. You know who he is. Famous Crip from Long Beach. His bodyguard killed someone who approached his car with a gun. Shortly after this, he made a song. It's called Deep Cover, also known as 187 on an Undercover Cop.
187 is murder.
And that's the California Penal Code for murder. The chorus goes, yeah, and you don't stop because it's 187 on an undercover cop, repeated. So anyway, this is a world famous song that people are chanting in the streets of Long Beach. And then the police chief of Long Beach said, as a community outreach thing, Terry and Diana and the gang unit had to go meet with Snoop Dogg and all the Crips who just sang 187 on a cop and play basketball with him and be nice and play nice. And they did.
They don't like him.
And this, and they're not fans of a guy talking about killing their brothers in blue. And they were asked to, again, as public servants, go out there, play nice, and be around someone who's openly glorified murdering their brothers and sisters in blue. So, I mean,
and the reason those people aren't out just running through the streets murdering everyone, including you and your family, is because we do have order in this country. Mm-hmm. And so we just wanted to so say our appreciation for law enforcement, but on a personal level, the first time that Jamie was shot was her ex-boyfriend and a friend of his who was never named, never charged, nothing. Jamie's boyfriend was charged with 10 years and went to prison. But this other guy was never found. The point is that after she was shot that first time, and it is beyond a miracle, you guys. And I know if you've read Still Standing After All the Tears, you might already know this, but Jamie had 50 staples holding her gut back together. It was an abdominal gunshot wound that actually was I don't want to say a stray bullet, but it wasn't like he pointed at her and executed her. They unloaded on a house with a bunch of people in it, a duplex.
Hit her as she was running up the stairs.
No, she was inside the room, inside the apartment, but she was by herself. I don't know why. Everyone else was on the other side of the duplex. She was by herself. For whatever reason, one bullet hit anyone, and it was her. And it entered her backside right next to her tailbone, barely missed her iliac vein, barely missed her pelvic. I mean, everything was barely. They literally said that the bullet missed her iliac vein, which is a main vein, by an immeasurable distance. And Jamie had to call 911 on herself and lay down on the floor in a pool of blood waiting for help. But the point I wanted to make about law enforcement, because by the way, I just want to do a quick shout out to not just to law enforcement, but to the first responders, the paramedics that came to save her. They also had to run in, and they're not cops.
The doctors and surgeons who performed life-saving surgery, bringing blood bags, running blood bags in for transfusions. And
yes.
It was a village of people.
Totally amazing.
Remember the guy telling us at one point that it missed her liver or one of her...
It missed everything.
Important organs by like 140 something of a millimeter. And also said that, millimeter. And then also said that she also had like a 1 in 40 something million chance of, or 80 million chance of it not hitting anywhere and then being able to save her life. Like it was crazy. They performed a miracle.
Yeah, the bullet went all over, traversed inside of her. It just damaged all a fallopian tube and an ovary, and it did a lot of damage. So they opened her up and spent 4.5 hours cauterizing vessels and veins. As a matter of fact, I said, excuse me, to the surgeon, did you get the bullet out? For some reason, I was fixated on getting, you know, where's the bullet? There was no exit wound. Where's the bullet? He looked at me. He literally looked at me like I had three heads, Sean. He goes, you don't understand. Abdominal gunshot wounds are fatal. He said, we were just trying to save her life. We spent 4.5 hours cauterizing vessels and veins. And he goes, and I said, well, then what do we do now? And he said, we just wait to see if she wakes up. And so when the detective got there, the thing that really hit me about law enforcement specifically is that, remember, there's two shooters down on the street, bullets flying everywhere. And there was a father of one of the girls that was at this duplex. They're having some taco night there. And he had just dropped something off to her, and he was standing next to his brand new van and hid behind it. So he saw, he was a really good witness to what happened. But what the detective said to me was, the number of bullet casings on the street, you wouldn't even believe. Mm-hmm. He said, I couldn't even count them all. I mean, it wasn't his job to count them. He looked down and he just thought, it wasn't like, oh, there's 20. There were so many. And all I could think about is picture that call that you get. Maybe you're about ready to get off shift or whatever. And you get the call, active shooter. And you imagine how many 911 calls. Mm-hmm. If someone's standing on the street unloading clip after clip is what he told me. Imagine the number of calls you get to 911.
Well, and these are the types of calls that are going on a regular basis. And people talk about, you know, well, cops have killed people and stuff. Yes, there have been bad cops who have done the wrong thing. 100%. Yep. We are not denying that. I can tell you right now, I'll give a controversial opinion here. The Fruitvale Station, if you're familiar with that one, that cop executed that poor kid and it was awful. That being said, the guy in Georgia who had just gotten out of prison was drunk driving through a Taco Bell and attacked two cops and stole their taser and got shot. Stupid games, stupid prizes. But these are the calls they're going on every single day on a regular basis. And additional to that, they're not compensated that well unless they're highly ranked. Once you get up to lieutenant, captain, major, sheriff, chief, those upper ranks in sheriffs or PDs, those guys get paid decently well. But they're not getting paid life-changing money. Why would you sign up to make $60,000 a year, be scrutinized nonstop by everyone, just to be an asshole to people? And there's never any blame is always tossed on the law enforcement, not on the person who... How did two people end up in this situation? One cop just said, today I'm going to go target you. I'm going to follow you everywhere you go. Wait till you break one single law and then I'm going to drag you out of your car and beat your head in. Well, no. Every single time this happens, they've arrested you 25 times already. They've been to your house for domestic violence. There's always these things. And this is what they're dealing with. They're pulling people over in dangerous situations. They're walking into homes not knowing what's on the other side.
And
they
have families.
And they're getting treated.
They want to go home too.
They're getting treated terribly.
No, it's actually
in general.
It's an abomination what's happening right now. It makes me sick. That's why I just wanted to tell our story, and someone else might have a different story, and I can appreciate that. But the fact that two guys unloaded on a house, multiple clips, as they told me. I didn't even know what the word clip was until then. And they're just reloading and they run to that when everyone else is running away. They run toward the danger. Can anyone appreciate that? Because I want to ask you, ask anybody, if all this gunfire was happening, what would you be doing? You would run. I know we all want to think we're going to be like, Arnold Schwarzenegger or whoever, and shoot it out. We're all going to run. And they run toward the danger. So I so appreciate that. And then...
I wanted to piggyback on that actually quickly. I have a personal story that was told directly to me by the SWAT team commander of Las Vegas PD Metro on the night of
the
country concert. He not only was he in charge of sending his men down a hallway that they knew was a straight tube for bullets. His men volunteered with no hesitation. He had off-duty officers out the yazoo showing up. People who were in shorts and tank tops who had their personal sidearm in their car who ran into the casino to confront the shooter. These people sprinted at the gunfire. But he told me about one in particular. They have to clear this hallway and people are volunteering left and right. I'll be the first one down.
Wow.
First one down.
And that probably has children at home.
If the guy's shooting with a high-powered rifle, you're dead.
Yes.
They're volunteering. Thankfully, the idiot killed himself prior. But he said there was one female cop in particular who was very, very risk-averse. If there was an opportunity for there to ever be altercation, physical, whatever, she was the first one to back down. Call someone else to handle it, would never go hands-on in any situation.
Probably had children.
He said she was a very nervous cop, and then she proceeded to show us her body camera footage of all the people running past her, screaming their heads off to get away, her looking directly up at the hotel, running towards it. You can see gunfire coming down out of her body camera. The woman was terrified of a hand-to-hand confrontation, sprinting towards visible gunfire.
That makes me want to cry.
And this is just a regular Vegas cop that you'll never know. You'll never know her name and you'll never hear about her. And she doesn't ask for any credit or anything. She's just doing it because it's the duty.
Like the ones that came when Jamie was shot that first time. And again, the paramedics. But the paramedics are typically going in when the cops are there. And if the cops aren't there, no one's going to save Jamie. If the cops hadn't gone in, Jamie would not have been saved. And then, fast forward 12 years and 12 days later, when Jamie was killed, and we learned a lot about this afterwards, because you'd like to think that law enforcement could tell you and the DA's office could tell you everything that's going on in your case because it's your family. But, you know, they have to hold certain things close to the vest. And I understand that. So preliminary hearing, we learned a lot more about the details. But one of the things that happened was that, and this is all on the record now, so I can say this, but the witness and her friend that were in the house that saw Jamie be murdered, one of the three people, three separate people that were, that came to testify, shots fired were called for Jamie's shooting. But what happened was somebody involved with all of this took those two girls away from the scene. And it was not going to be a good situation for them. Thank God they made it out. And I won't get into all the details, but the witnesses were taken away.
Yeah.
So when the cops came down that street, they didn't know where to go. They didn't know which house to go to because the people in the house had left. Everyone was gone. Jamie laid there by herself dying, but no one knew at this time. So then when these girls were able to escape from that situation, they called the police. So it was like 15, 20 minutes later, the cop went in. Unfortunately, Jamie had been already, I mean, she was gone already, but yeah, I still appreciate.
They weren't on scene for until a half hour after she'd been shot 7 times.
But I don't know, but they still don't know. Like you said earlier, Sean, they don't know what they're running into. They don't know if the guy's still sitting in the house and is going to pick them off. So they go over there. And first thing he wants to do is check for vitals and then clear the scene. So they have to leave her there and they have to clear the scene. So my point is, you said it earlier, they don't know what the hell they're running into.
To piggyback even more on that, because that's a really interesting thing that's become really important in our lives too. The first person on scene, he knew she was dead, but he's not allowed to proclaim her dead. He showed up probably a half hour after because those people were taken away. No one was able to call. No one knew what house it came from. People had heard shots fired, but nobody knew where. So finally they get the location. He runs into a pitch black back, sees a bloody body and has to clear quickly, then go back down. He performed CPR on her even though she was gone.
Yeah, covered in blood.
They take her to the hospital. He rode in the ambulance with her, waited till they declared her dead, and then he had to go wash his hands off, do paperwork, and finish the rest of his shift for the day.
Just like everybody and else's day at
he,
work,
he
right?
Never asked, yeah. He never asked for extra credit, nothing. So interestingly that you brought that up in particular, February 10th, of 2023 was the day of the pretrial hearing for us. And we met the DA. And as the whole thing is wrapping, we're all getting in an elevator together. It's sort of like Jamie's team, the DA, her lead investigator. And I just start talking to him because he says he's a retired cop and now he's the lead investigator for them. And I tell him, we really want to meet the guy who was the first person on scene who provided CPR to my sister who was dead and da 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 da. And it just by circumstance, he put his head down and he raised his hand and said, that was me. And all I could choke out was thank you. And I shook his hand. And then I think you...
I've been wanting to meet him for six and a half years.
I think you hugged him and cried in his arms for a minute.
Yes.
And thanked him. But even sitting in that room with us, he didn't come over. Hey, I'm the guy first on the scene. He asked for zero credit.
No.
And he wasn't going to say a word if I didn't say anything.
How lucky we were that he's now works for the DA's office. Mm-hmm. But as you're talking about him, I wanted to mention another one. So the detective, and the way it works in this very small police department, where Jamie was killed, is that I like to say you don't make detective, you play detective, and I don't mean that in any disrespectful way, but they only let you be a detective for 5 years, then you have to go back onto the streets, then you can be a detective again after a year. I can't remember what the...
Yeah, there's a rotation.
Yeah, and it must just be because it's a small department. I don't know why they do it, but that's what they do. But anyway, at the time, he was detective. His name is Detective Ledain, and he then went out and was a cop again at, you know, during this, there's been a long years process right here, right? But when he came to testify, because at the time, it's still his case. Even if he remains on the streets and he never, you know, he's patrol and he's never a detective again, they consider it his case. So, you know, it's been years that have passed. So, of course, and there's binders. I was in his office only one time and there was three binders sitting there. And I went, wow. And they're big. They're like 6-inch binders. And I went, wow, that's a lot. He goes, oh, those are just some of them. So there's so much case file and details and everything that you can't possibly remember. So you have to educate yourself before you come to testify, because he had to be really one of the main people testifying. When we talked to him, what was very interesting is, this is another thing when you said, it's not like they're getting paid a lot. So it was his day off. He needs to come and testify. He's not paid.
He's also not sure when he's going to testify. So he shows up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
He was there all day.
And they don't call him to the stand, I think, until 3 in the afternoon. So he spent I think when it was all said and done, 7.5 hours sitting out in that lobby, going through case files and reading it all on his own dime.
And then literally testified for like 10 minutes, but he stayed there all day. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I also appreciate the other thing that people don't understand too, because we hear, oh, they pulled someone over and this interaction happened. They also have to, it's the detectives that go and put the case together. It's a lot of paperwork and legwork. It's not, you know, shooting
people. Chasing down people in the throes of addiction to interview them and ask
what happened. That don't want to talk to you.
Getting the wrong names from people and thinking the wrong person did it. I mean, the amount of work that they had to do to...
It was huge.
And then the guys on the lam, at one point they believe he fled across the border into Mexico and he's in Arizona. And it took them time to catch him. They had to have a joint task force, and the U.S. Marshals were the ones that finally caught him. I mean, this was no...
No,
they've probably spent at this point on Jamie's behalf. I bet that between all the agencies, it's well over $1 million in total payroll, possibly, time, effort, all of that trying to help her.
Yeah. And they don't know us. And by the way, they could just think of her as just some junkie. They could. I'm not saying they should, but they could. And we've appreciated that. According to the DA's office, they said that the Indio Police Department did an amazing job, put together a great case under circumstances you just mentioned. But people don't want to talk to them.
Mm-mm.
The people in Jamie's life at the time were all in addiction. They were all doing illegal things. These are not friends to the police department. Other than that one girl who didn't, she was in addiction, but she didn't have any interaction with the police. Other than that, though, these people don't want to talk to you. And you're going and you're doing this for a girl who was really one of them. But I appreciate how much they believe in their soul that it doesn't matter that Jamie ended up living with an addiction beast. She didn't do anything to deserve to die.
Yeah. LaDain actually said that to me. He was like, I don't make opinions and judgments about victims. The fact of the matter is, your sister's a victim. She was killed by somebody she didn't deserve to die, and he has to pay for it. That's
right.
It's simple. And yeah.
So that's why I feel like, you know, even if you're, whether you're a state patrol or a patrolman or someone who just writes tickets, works in a school, or you are a detective, or you're like Terry and Diana, where you do vice and go undercover, or you're a SWAT person, or like, there's all levels of law enforcement, but it takes all of them to keep the rest of us safe. And it's just like how I feel about the military. I'm so grateful that people are willing to go run into these battlefields, and really the police are running into battlefields too. I appreciate they're willing to do that for, you know, okay pay, for people they don't even know, and like you said, for a claim that's not coming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our, I have no idea if there's really a law enforcement appreciation day. For me, it's every day.
Yeah.
But I just wanted, Sean and I both wanted to come and just tell you guys from our perspective why we appreciate law enforcement so much and what they've done for our family and what they do for countless families that you'll never know about.
Well, I have one final thing I wanted to share just for a little bit of maybe levity at the end here. I always try to do that. But I thought of something fairly funny that I had the Cajun region that I used to work with. So I had an actual Cajun police chief, and I'm going to butcher the accent, but...
Oh, they're hard to understand.
I worked with him. His wasn't too bad. He sounded a little more like Harry Connick Jr., but he... I asked him, how the hell do you deal with all this stuff going on in the world and being a cop? And he goes, Sean, assholes come in all shapes and sizes. That's why I choose just to be nice to people. And I said, that's awesome. I said, that's great that you have such a good attitude. And he goes, oh, brother, if I was any more happy, I'd need a second person. this is a guy.
So he chooses.
This is a guy who lives in one of the most dangerous cities in the most dangerous state in the entire United States of America, who's seen the most horrific things in the world. And he has a great attitude, and he goes out there and does that job every day. Don't forget about those people. Don't just turn on a YouTube clip and watch the last 10 seconds of someone getting slammed on the ground and think cops are a-holes. The guy did something to get himself in that situation, most likely.
Yes, most likely.
So,
yep.
And I've met a lot of cops, and most of them are salt of the earth. Met a couple a-holes, but most of them are pretty salt of the earth.
But what a great attitude. I'm going to, you know what I mean? Every time I hear a story like that, just that little funny thing you just said, it makes me think. We have a choice every single day, how we want to be, the attitude we want to take. Whether you want to become a victim or you want to become bitter, and he's chosen to have a good attitude. So I'm going to take that as a first time I've heard that story. I'm going to take that as an inspiration into the rest of my week.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, thanks for being here, Sean. Thank you all for listening. And thank you so much. God bless you. Please stay safe, all of you out in law enforcement.